Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is a Tuesday. I'm rambunctious. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I am going to lose myself a little this morning because when I get frustrated, I get a little preachy, and I'm going to get a little preachy with USC looking for a football coach in 5 minutes. I'm not going to lead with it. I want to lead with that S show I watched last night on television.
It was amazing.
If the movie Hangover was a game, that was last night.
That's a good line. Yes, I've lived the Hangover in Vegas many times.
Game won, game lost. You had money, you lost.
How Vegas was it?
Oh, it was
how Vegas was the beginning of it. I was loving it.
It was incredible. So let me start with that. Nothing against the St. Louis Rams, but the LA Rams feel bigger. Nothing against, you know, your Jacksonville Jaguars or your Oakland Raiders, but God, is Vegas perfect? Are the Raiders perfect for Vegas? Is Vegas perfect for the Raiders? But I want to talk about Derek Carr. And there are 10 quarterbacks in this league better than Derek Carr. And there's 20 quarterbacks in this league that Derek Carr is better than. He's in a group of two or three guys we can argue about. Tannehill, Derek Carr, I like Carr. Matt Ryan, Derek Carr, I don't know. Carson Wentz, Derek Carr, he's not as good as 10, he's better than 20. And then we can argue about stuff. Dak's probably better, but he's in that class. But what he did last night is what Baker Mayfield could not do Sunday. Almost no time on the clock. He trails. Everybody in the stadium, including the defense, knows he has to pass. Boom, boom, field goal, overtime win. It's what Baker couldn't do Sunday. Derek had 37 seconds. Baker had 2 minutes. Baker had two drives. Three and out on one, interception on the other. Derek had 1:37 with a worse supporting cast and a worse offensive line. And Derek Carr did what top 12 quarterbacks do. This is what he said yesterday. The 99% of this league is paid to be able to lead a team down the field when they have a great offensive line, a great running game, a great scheme, and the defense has no idea what you're doing. That was Baker Mayfield Monday or Sunday. That's what you're paid to do. That's just being a guy. Talking as a sports host, you could just be a person. Get ratings. That's the difference. Derek Carr did what Baker couldn't do. 37 seconds. Baker had two drives. His final drive, he had 2 minutes. 1 3-and-out, 1 pick. This NFL is not about just, hey, I've got a lead. That's what I always say about Alabama quarterbacks. It's easy when you got a lead. How'd Mac Jones look trailing? How'd Mac Jones look with not a lot of time? How'd Mac Jones look when maybe the other team had more good players than the team you're on? That's the difference. Derek Carr, every single human knew. You got about three plays, that's it, and you have to throw. Pin the ears back, bring them, linebackers drop, 60 Bs, boom, boom, field goal, overtime wins it. 435 yards, two touchdowns. The pick should have been caught. The receiver got a hand on it. But that's the difference between a guy and special. And Derek isn't as good as the top 10 in this league. You know who they are. And he's better than 20. He's in the argument with Tannehill and Matt Ryan and maybe a Carson Wentz. But and by the way, most good quarterbacks above Derek Carr in this league, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, you know, the top guys, they're not asked to carry a bad roster. Derek Carr's asked to carry a bad roster. This is a fourth-place team. This team's going to finish 7-10. They don't have Denver's roster. They don't have the Chargers' roster. They don't have Kansas City's roster. Derek's one of the only really, really good quarterbacks in this league. The other is Matt Ryan, who is asked to carry a suboptimal roster. So I'm going to defend him time and time again. I've said this. It's easy to have a great life if you're a trust fund kid. Okay, it's hard when you come from chaos and you have to carry parents or carry a brother and carry a sister and work in high school, work in college. Derek Carr may have the most dysfunctional front office in the NFL. Guyer's fired in the offseason. The GM's had multiple picks whiffed. Gruden's crazy town. I don't know if he can coach anymore. Their offensive line's not as good as last year. The offense is basically carried by two guys, Derek Carr and Darren Waller, and they're both excellent. Waller's insane. But I love what I saw last night. I'm not saying he's as good as the top 10. I'm not saying he's Russell Wilson. That's not what I'm saying. But what he did last night, that is elite-level quarterbacking. You look up at a stadium, 37 seconds. You don't have a great roster. They're double-teaming Darren Waller. You got to get down the field for a field goal and tie it. Everybody knows you're throwing. Linebackers are dropping in the coverage, pinning their ears back. Boom, boom, field goal, OT, win it. That's elite quarterback play. Here's Derek Carr.
It reminded me so much of my career so far. A lot of this, you know what I'm saying? And I'm thankful for this group because on both sides we made plays to help us lose it and to help us win it. But the only thing that matters at the end of the day is that score, as we've talked about. So I'm glad that we won.
All right. Congrats to Derek Carr. I will support Lamar Jackson in a little bit. USC fired their coach yesterday. Nice guy, didn't get it done. No reason to stomp on him. Wonderful family man. Good luck to Clay Helton. I love college football, and you know that, and I especially love USC. College football, though, has worn me out in recent years. I talk much less about it today than I ever have. Because college football is in a perpetual cycle of thinking small, looking down. I'm not into that. I read every single college football reporter yesterday, and it was all the same names up for the USC job. Just a bunch of nice college guys. They coach in towns like Ames, Iowa, and rural Pennsylvania. Bruh, it's LA. Last time this program mattered, they had an NFL coach, Pete Carroll. They didn't matter before then until they had an NFL guy, John Robinson. When's the last time UCLA mattered? Dick Vermeil was at their best. They're winning again with Chip Kelly, NFL coaches. When's the last time Miami mattered? Butch Davis. Stop bringing guys from Temple to your program. There's three urban universities in America with powerful college football programs: Miami, USC, and UCLA. And if you look at the most successful guys that have cut through, it's Butch Davis, Jimmy Johnson, and Dennis Erickson, NFL guys. USC, John Robinson, Pete Carroll. And by the way, Sark, who's coached in the NFL and could get a job in the NFL again, I think at the coordinator level, he was successful before he had personal issues. UCLA, Dick Vermeil, now Chip Kelly's got him rolling. They get the big city. They're not small town guys. They get the big picture. College football now has a name, image, likeness, reality. It is an avalanche, and it's going a million miles downhill. And you listen to all these college coaches. They're all freaking out about NIL. My players are going to make money. NFL guys coach millionaires. That's the future of this sport. I would get on the phone to Doug Peterson, to Anthony Lynn, to Matt Nagy, NFL coaches. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. Matt Nagy got to the playoffs twice with Mitch Trubisky. Anthony Lynn won a playoff game with 109-year-old Phillip Rivers and a bad O-line. They've got a presence. They're not control freaks like all these college coaches. They don't freak out with name, image, likeness. They don't need control because they have owners in the NFL. NFL coaches, even Belichick. Trade Garoppolo. That's what Bill did. Andy Reid has no control. Sean Payton doesn't have any control. Pete Carroll has some, probably not as much as he'd like. College, I see all these names. They're all fine coaches. Lincoln Riley, Why the hell would you leave Oklahoma for USC and their political nonsense? James Franklin, he's a college coach. He wants control. He makes $8 million a year in rural Pennsylvania. What would you have to make in Los Angeles? $15 million? That's just for him. His staff's another $10 million. He wants control. LA's not a town you can control. Every single team in this city that has gone big has been rewarded. The Lakers went big with LeBron and AD. The Rams went big with Stafford and Sean McVay. They took a dice roll. They went and got Justin Herbert. The Chargers went big. Chip Kelly spent a lot of money on Chip Kelly, even though he'd just come from an NFL situation that was a tire fire. It's now working. USC went big with Pete Carroll. They went big with Mookie Betts. This is not Ames, Iowa. It's not Knoxville. We don't want control freaks because nobody controls L.A. The biggest stars in L.A. are bums after a movie bombs. If you're looking for control, live in the sticks. That's not what this city's about. And it's not what college football, if it ever is going to grow, is about. I got nothing against all these college coaches. They're wonderful guys. They win. But college coaches need control. That's why they're all freaking out with NIL. They're all freaking out. This thing's going off the rails. I got to pay players. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles over Brady. He's on the beach. Call him and pay him. Anthony Lynn, Nagy. They're good looking. They've got a presence. They don't need control. They've dealt with owners. They've dealt with millionaires. Could college football once in my life go big and not rural? Nothing against Norman, Oklahoma. Nothing against Auburn, Alabama. College football is about small towns. Miami has been trying for years to win. Let's go get the Temple guy. Let's go get enough. Miami, get on the phone. Call Doug Peterson. You won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. Come on. Look at USC. Look at UCLA. Look at Miami. These are when Miami and USC, I've said this many times before. College football misses USC and Miami. I've said this 100 times. When Miami and USC were at the top of this sport, it felt big. When USC played Texas, it got a 22.5 rating. That's an NFL playoff rating. Now it gets 15s. It feels insular and small. Plus, if you go get a college guy, you got to deal with his agent, and he'll screw up his recruiting class, and he'll deny it. Get out of that mess. If college football and USC are going to grow, for the love of you know what, go big. The sport, by the way, the NFL is now borrowing college stuff. College should go to the NFL and borrow NFL stuff. If you look at USC, UCLA, and Miami, seven of their eight most successful coaches, NFL guys that saw the world beyond controlling the media and controlling the athletic department and controlling the athlete. Bruh, those days are over. Athletes have control. And in Los Angeles, it is a distracted city. We got two NFL teams and star quarterback. We got two NBA teams, four or five star players. The Dodgers have eight all-stars. Years ago, I mean, just to give you a sense of what's happened in Los Angeles because of Silicon, when Pete Carroll was here, Silicon Valley wasn't as big as it was. People are so distracted. Miami and LA have beaches. That's like another pro team. I mean, it's not about winning in Los Angeles. You have to cut through in Los Angeles. It's not about winning in Miami. You got to cut through in Miami. There are too many things to do. Aqua water, NFL, NHL, NBA, baseball. Go up to Fort Lauderdale for the weekend. You got waves. It's 82 degrees. Grab the surfboard. Same in Los Angeles. But I look at all this stuff right now. If you want to get the right coach, every single reporter that covers college football, the same 12 names, you know what's going to happen? 90% of those guys are going to turn you down or use USC to get a raise. That's what's happened with USC and Miami for years. Schools and coaches use you and agents use you to get a raise. Get out of that space. Go big. Go pro. Please. Make the sport feel big again.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So, you know, it is interesting about the NFL. There are no perfect quarterbacks, although I will acknowledge Patrick Mahomes is close. He can run, he can throw, he's a good guy, he's got leadership skills. He's pretty close. Okay. He right up against perfect. Maybe he swore once. He's right up against perfect. Everybody else, Brady can't move very well. I mean, Breeze couldn't throw a deep ball. Even the guys I like, Russell Wilson, ideally you wish he was a little taller. Sometimes he runs out of made plays and throws. Even the guys I like. But it's funny, Lamar Jackson, it's just him. His flaws I can't stand. He has an all-time winning percentage of 80% and his passer rating is mid-90s. I don't know. That sounds good to me. I'll go on Google and see if that means anything. So last night, the knives come out for Lamar Jackson last night. So let me start with this. I bet the Raiders last night. I bet $50 on the Raiders. I won and have already spent the money on hair products. So I bet the Raiders last night. And I think the Raiders are a fourth place team. Okay, let's contextualize it. There are nights, there are places where I can like a team for a moment, not long term. Baltimore is better than the Raiders, but I didn't think they'd be better last night. And let's also say this. The Raiders' D-line was about as good as it's been in years. They had 3 sacks against Lamar. It was Monday Night Football in Vegas, on the road, travel cross country. First time the Raiders had fans. The place was, I had buddies there. It was a zoo. And number 3 is Baltimore is a running team. They had cluster injuries at running back. I mean, Lamar Jackson, should be noted, led Baltimore in rushing and ended up with a higher passer rating than Derek Carr, and I thought Derek Carr played well. So here's the thing. Lamar's a playmaker. He gets hit more than I'd like. He fumbles a little more than I like, but he doesn't throw many picks. Last year, 26 TDs, 9 picks, and he had 4 fumbles lost. So Lamar Jackson, you're all banging on him this morning on the fumbles. He had 13 total turnovers last year. And he's the most elusive quarterback, arguably, in league history. That kind of matters. By the way, Brady last year had 13 total turnovers. Lamar Jackson last year had 13 total turnovers. You don't bag on Brady's turnovers. Russell Wilson, 17 turnovers last year. Lamar Jackson had 13. Josh Allen, I love Josh Allen, 16 turnovers last year. Again, Lamar had 13. But it's those fumbles with Lamar that really bother you. He gets hit. He runs a lot. It happens. Derek Carr, I love him. He lost 8 fumbles last year. Yes. Derek Carr doesn't run around. He lost 8 fumbles. So Lamar's unique. And in this country and in this sport, myself included, sometimes we struggle with unique. We don't know what to make of it. But y'all love Cam Newton. He never had back-to-back winning seasons. And all the data tells you that Lamar Jackson is a significantly more accurate thrower of the football. And my favorite quality of Lamar Jackson, beyond the fact that he's the fastest quarterback I've ever seen, and I love this quality in people, God, he cares. He cares so much. He's never distracted. He's totally focused. He cares so much. He gets so mad when he fumbles. He gets so mad when he fails. He changes his body. He's tried to change everything. Folks, you don't have to have, does it matter to you? It's a great question in life. If you want to do what I do for a living, I don't have the best voice. I don't. You don't have to, how badly do you want it? I tell the story years ago. I'm a little kid. Well, I was in college. So in college, I wanted to be a sportscaster. All I ever wanted to do. When I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a sportscaster. So I'm in college. Parents are divorced. I'm paying my own way. I got no money. I'm just a tire fire. And there was a big popular local announcer for the Seattle Mariners named Dave Niehaus. He was a legendary broadcaster, great pipes. I mean, he was like one of my idols as a kid. And so here I am. I'm 18 years old, and I go up. I don't even know how I did it. I got up to the press box. I probably BS'd my way up there. And there's Dave Niehaus. The door opens, and there's one of my idols. I mean, it was intimidating. Like it was 2 hours before the game. So I go over to him with a program and he couldn't have been more gracious. He's passed away. Couldn't have been nicer. And he wrote something in my program that is what I stole from Dave. And I tell all young broadcasters today, dear Colin, if you want to sit here, you will. That's it. How bad want it. And I wanted it really bad. Lamar Jackson wants it so bad. He gets so upset. Y'all love Cam. Cam was distracted. You can like him. You'd have to acknowledge. He kind of distracted. Lamar is totally focused. Here's Lamar after the game last night.
That tipped me off. You know, I hate fumble. I hate any type of turnover. But the first one that tipped me off because we had them right. It was right down there. You know, they little punch zone. They could have scored right then and there. That tipped me off. Then the last one, just two hands on the ball. Try to have two hands on the ball. Could have just took a sack, if anything. But yeah. It happens, football.
It does. It happens. And he's the best playmaker at quarterback in the league. But it really bothers him. I watched that Green Bay quarterback this weekend. Does he care? 50-50 retirement. You're going to have to pull the ball out of Lamar's hands in 10 years. Every day he wants to be the Ravens quarterback. And that's my kind of guy, even if he has a weird throwing motion.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
The Buffalo Bills are number 10. They had more yards than Pittsburgh, more first downs than Pittsburgh, more third down conversions than Pittsburgh, won the time of possession battle. They got to the red zone four times. They allowed the fewest yards in the NFL this weekend. Total yards allowed. Fewest allowed in the AFC was Buffalo. They had a punt blocked and lost the game. Pittsburgh couldn't move the ball. They couldn't run. They couldn't pass. They couldn't do anything. And they blocked a punt. And yes, the Steelers' defensive front is excellent. Buffalo's the better team. There is no question. With the better quarterback, Bills at 10.
Number 9.
Denver, you got to keep your eye on him. They average 6 yards a carry. And the Giants' defense is good. Teddy Bridgewater was fantastic. He completed 77.8% of his throws. And they won the possession, time of possession, by over 10 minutes. We have said it all offseason. They got real players. Elway got real players. George Patton, the new GM. This is a real roster. They got to get the quarterback right. And they decided, as a franchise, we can win games if we just don't turn it over. And they're right, because they looked really impressive. This is a playoff roster. Whether they get there, we'll see.
Number 8.
Arizona. Not sure what to make of them. Their defense had 6 sacks on Ryan Tannehill. They only allowed 3.8 yards a play. That was the best of any defense in the NFL. Kyler Murray, 4 touchdowns, first 5 red zone trips. Listen, they went all in the offseason. They said, we already have Chandler Jones. We're going to get J.J. Watt. We already have DeAndre Hopkins. We're going to go get A.J. Green. They have drafted Buda Baker's an elite safety. Isaiah Simmons. They got dudes. Like, all over the place. They may be a fourth-place team in their division. They'll be the best fourth-place team in the history of the league because they are fast and wildly physical.
Number 7.
49ers. Don't love the way they finished, but they did lead 41-17 with 2 minutes left before the wheels came off. They were the highest-scoring team in the NFL this weekend. And let me give Jimmy G credit because I like him a lot more than you do. He does lose his confidence quickly. I mean, they drafted his heir apparent, so that's never good for a quarterback's ego. But he was 6 for 7 on passes 10 plus yards down the field. That is the highest percentage of any quarterback in the league in week 1. Believe it or not, Jimmy G.
Number 6.
Listen, the Cleveland Browns lost to a great team. Okay, they still averaged 8 yards a play. That was the most by any team in the league. They have to play a certain way with Baker. They got to play with a lead. They got to play with a run game. And once they started trailing and you ask Baker to throw into a defense that knows he's throwing, he's not the same quarterback. But he's talented enough to win the division. I have him winning the division. Now, their defense struggled on third down. But again, it's Mahomes. Everybody's going to struggle on third down against Mahomes. So I don't want to take too much of that. This is still a very good football team that I think wins their division, and it may win it by a couple games.
Number five.
I don't know how many of you watch the Chargers, but they were 14 of 19 on third down. That's 74% on third down against arguably the best defense in the NFC, a defense that gave Tom Brady trouble in the playoffs. Rashawn Slater, their left tackle, was a monster. Chase Young, non-factor at rush end. The defense allowed the fewest yards, passing yards, by any team in week one. Some of that is because they Washington went to their backup. They were so good on third down. Herbert was so under control between Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. They are a tough, tough team to defend in late downs.
Number four.
Buccaneers. Listen, if you can turn the ball over four times and win, I didn't think they played well. I did not think Tampa played well. They turned it over to a highly explosive offense. Cowboys got four turnovers. They gave Dak the four turnovers, and they lost. So Tampa, Brady was one of two quarterbacks in the league that did not get sacked. I think the unheralded part of this team is their O-line. We thought that was a huge issue when Tom came down. We said, New England's always got great O-lines. Tampa doesn't. Tristan Wirfs, Ryan Jensen, the center. They're really good up front. They're really good up front, and Tom's got plenty of time to throw to those weapons.
Number three.
Seahawks. Listen, Russell Wilson had the highest completion percentage in the league. Their defense got 10 hits on Carson Wentz, and that's against an elite offensive line. They look really polished. Wide receivers, run games. Listen, they got five running backs here. Their special teams are good now. They got five running backs. So don't be shocked if they don't move a running back before the trade deadline. They have a surplus of running backs. There's not a lot here I don't like. I think they're thin on the offensive line. Don't love them at center. I think they're thin up front. But now that Dwayne Brown is in, Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, you have elite, elite players. And their pass rush this weekend was special.
Number two.
Kansas City. You overcome a 12-point deficit to a roster as good as Cleveland, it's impressive. Mahomes now 3-0 against Baker Mayfield. That's not a shot, but it tells you he's never lost to Lamar Jackson. He's never lost to Baker. And those guys are winning a lot of games now, right? Like, this is a real good football team. It is the most score irrelevant team in the league. The score doesn't matter. They play as well behind as in front. I can't say that about any other player in the league except Tom Brady and maybe Russell Wilson. The score with 8 minutes to go is largely irrelevant with Kansas City, and it's incredibly relevant to virtually every other team and every other quarterback in the league. Mahomes now is 11-0 in September, but the concern is defensively, they need Frank Clark back, and they need Honey Badger back because they got pushed around a little up front.
Number one.
Listen, we knew the Rams were good. It looked so easy. Chicago has been making the playoffs and been decent last couple years. They were 8-8 last year. That thing, that last half, that wasn't even close. And now they got the Colts on the road this weekend, the Buccaneers coming up. But the one thing the Rams have missed in recent years, I think we'd all agree, they don't have much home run pop. They had two 50-plus touchdown passes. They had two all season last year. They had two against Chicago. So I think they saw in the offseason they wanted more Mahomes-like pop. They wanted to be able to go over the top like a Buffalo or a Tampa. They wanted big play offense, not just brilliant 9-12 play drives from McVay's brain, and they delivered with Matt Stafford. I thought they were the best team I saw, and I thought they were good coming in.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Faherty, founded by twin brothers, family business, best looking clothes, backed by a lifetime guarantee of quality. Herd listeners, 20% off with the code Herd. Go to FahertyBrand.com/Herd. FahertyBrand.com/Herd. So I think guys, at least, you know, I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing stuff, but I've said this before. If I got trouble at home, you know, one of my kids was in trouble, my wife was yelling, screaming, throwing pots and pans at me, it probably wouldn't be the best show I'd ever have. There's limitations to how much any person can qualify and compartmentalize things. So Matt LaFleur did not want to hear it. I don't want to hear about Aaron fighting with the front office. That had nothing to do with the week one embarrassing performance.
There's a national media site that, just before he got into here, published a story saying that Rodgers' uncertain status might have impacted things yesterday. Do you think there's anything to that as far as a leader goes? And you know everything happened in the offseason. Do you think there's any impact at all on that, on this year's team?
No, I think this team's focused on now. And unfortunately, sometimes in this league, you get humbled. And certainly we got humbled. And like I said, it's about how we respond to that.
All right. Okay. Now let's not pretend that off seasons and the preseason don't matter a little. Let me give you four examples. The Colts had a messy preseason. They were the least vaccinated team, multiple COVID issues. Carson Wentz got hurt. Quentin Nelson got hurt. That offense was awful against Seattle at home. The New York Giants had the worst unit in the league in the offseason and in the preseason, the offensive line. The Giants' offensive line was, I said it on the air multiple times, I can't unsee it. It's terrible. It's the worst unit in the league. It was awful Sunday. Completely debilitated their team against Denver. You can't win with that offensive line. Green Bay, star quarterback at odds with the front office, scored 3 points. Lowest total in the league. Jacksonville had far more. And oh, by the way, we heard all offseason how great Stafford was with Sean McVay and how smooth and slick and sharp he looked at practice. And then he did Sunday. The offseason matters. It's always mattered. The preseason matters. You can tell. You hear rumors. You hear things. The Giants' O-line. The Colts had a messy preseason. Aaron arguing. Carson Palmer talked about it yesterday. This league is hard enough to win without distractions.
When you bring on all this criticism and all the doubt and you're asking for a trade and demanding certain things in the front office, that's just a lot for you to have to deal with throughout training camp, going into week two after an embarrassing loss. It's something that your teammates have to deal with and constantly get asked questions about. The offseason he's gone through, the training camp he's gone through, all the questions, you know, all the stuff he's got going in his personal life, those things can burden you. Those things can weigh you down. And Aaron looked like he had, you know, cement boots on at times.
Yes, the most talented reigning MVP of the league had 3 points and would have had a higher passer rating had he grabbed the ball and spiked it on every snap. Yeah, I'm going to go with it's not a coincidence. Just zany me. I'm going to go with not a coincidence. By the way, Aaron spent the entire offseason giving us signals and words that he didn't need football. That's what it looked like. It doesn't need him either. It's better with him, but he was not in that Thursday night game that set a record, Bucks and Dallas. Aaron didn't play in that game. It set a record. The Rams game got a huge rating. He wasn't in that game either. I got to be honest with you. Aaron has tried really hard to tell us all year how he doesn't need this, he doesn't need football, he doesn't need that, and that's what it looked like. He looked disengaged, it looked casual, there wasn't a ton of urgency. No sport humbles you like football. The quarterback needs the right coordinator. I mean, look at Brady last year in New England, and then to Tampa. Just look at the difference. Like, you need people in the sport. Aaron can say he doesn't need people, but you do need people. You need coaches. You need support. You need offensive linemen. It's okay to admit, I need Joy. My show's better. I need Ryan. He gets me hockey scores faster than anybody in this business. You need people. It's okay. We're all a little vulnerable. Nobody can do it in an island. It's okay to just say, I need football. It makes me happy. Gives me something to do every day. I like being part of a team, a unit. Stop trying to convince us how you don't need everybody.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Mark Sanchez, a decade in the NFL, former USC Trojan, 12-1 last time he started there, beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl, is now joining us. Mark, did the Niners-Lions mess, which is the craziest ending to a game I think I've ever seen. Let's start with that.
Sure.
Because it was like, I mean, up until then, it was a dominating performance. What worries you about San Francisco? Because they're obviously good up front. Is there anything that worries you about the Niners and what you saw at the end of that game?
You know, they tighten up a little bit at the end, right? They're running the ball, trying to run out the clock, and things just got real small, real fast. And they kept giving the other team opportunities. And that's, you know, that's their defense. They want to stay over the top. They're not going to get beat deep. They're going to smash you in the run game, try and create an 8-man box and make it a physical fight, right? Well, at the end, I mean, it was like they were scared to do anything. They didn't want to show anything. I felt like at the end, when you're trying to run out the clock, that's the time for Trey Lance. And I felt like they didn't want to show any of it. They showed a little bit.
That's
right?
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Because you can run all your read option stuff. He can have quick completions, whatever. But we also have to understand, I mean, the pass that Jimmy completes on the rollout at the very end, he was hesitant to throw the ball, then finds Deebo Samuel. Game's over. Game, set, match. Ice it. It's over. Deebo Samuel fall down. And Trey Flowers punches the ball out. So, I mean, a play like that, it's just they're going to work on that, I'm sure, at the end of a game like that. Catch that thing over the middle, find the first down marker, two hands and two knees, and just fall down in the prenatal position, you know?
Yeah.
So
they're a very good team, though.
Oh, very good. Very good. And that their running back that came in for Mostert, I called him Mini Mostert all the game because he got elevated from practice squad. I mean, he went off. He's got 4.3 speed like Mostert out of Louisiana. I mean, this kid's a baller, so he can play.
Mark Sanchez joining us. So you have this week Bears-Bengals. So let's talk about that. That's 1 Eastern on Fox. So you're already looking at tape right now.
Yeah.
You know, the Bears situation is, I've always kind of leaned towards start the veteran early, move into it. But by the way, there are young guys like Russell Wilson who walk into the league and chop it up. I get it. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. What would you do now week two? Week one, you have no juice, yet embarrassed. It's national TV. It's a short week.
Yeah.
What do you do now?
It's interesting because these guys have to understand what their role is. It has to be clearly defined. Here's my example. Me and Brad Smith, clearly defined. Sanchez is our starter. This is with the New York Jets. Brad Smith will come in and run some Wildcat stuff. And he was highly effective with that. And it was great. And we knew our roles. We knew what we were supposed to do. It was clear communication. When they bring in Tim Tebow, it's different. Now Tim kind of wants to play. Nobody really knows. Like, so this Tim's won a playoff game too. Like, is he supposed to start?
You're
is
right.
Mark supposed to start? Hey, Mark, you convert like a third and long. Okay, Tim, you go in on first down. Boom. Tim or the run game gets stuffed on first down. Now I'm stuck with the 2nd and 10. And we keep just flip-flopping. Look what it's no fault of Tim's or mine. It was just the situation. And unclear assignments, right? Poor communication, okay? For the Bears, they're kind of in the middle of that right now, right? They get down on the goal line or near the goal line inside the 10 on Monday night against the Rams. Boom, Andy gets him down there. Justin Fields goes in, completes his first pass. Next play, false start, Cole Kmet. Next play, Andy Dalton's in, interception. So they're like, to get a rhythm with this back and forth quarterback stuff, is really tough. I think it puts the play caller in a tough spot because his job is to make your quarterback successful and put him in successful positions. But when you keep going back and forth with these guys and they don't understand their roles, that is so hard. Like, is he going in just to do a Wildcat special stuff or is he going in to play quarterback and drop back, read a defense, complete a ball? Because that stuff, it weighs on you. You could see it with Jimmy as well and Trey. So they just have to know what's going on. As far as moving forward, just get clear definition of what are we doing and explain it. Relay that information to your quarterback so they know. Here's his set of plays. Here's your set of plays. This is what we're doing. Or it's just, hey, it's a grab bag. I'll let you know.
By the way, you have Bears-Bengals. Joe Burrow has had a tough spot. It's not a great roster right now. When you moved into New York, if you know that, you had a pretty good offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
You had a run game. So it is easier for somebody like a Trey Lance who inherits. There's some players.
No doubt.
Joe Burrow hasn't had them. You're going to start looking at film here. I got to tell you, I'm kind of taken back by how quick he learned sometimes things. He, by the way, never locks in on one receiver.
No.
His head is moving all over the field. I'm kind of blown away by how good he is.
He's dialed in, and he's got two great wideouts. That's what he has. And he knows that. And he also knows, hey, maybe if this offensive line isn't going to protect me all, you know, for 4 or 5 seconds like some other quarterbacks in the league, I can't just stand back there patting the ball, cooking steaks in the backfield. Okay, fine. I'll get the ball out. And he gets it out fast.
Yes.
And accurate. And the biggest thing, my biggest takeaway from this game when you're coming off a huge injury like that is when you get piled on, when you get tangled up a little bit. I mean, he popped up like nothing. And you heard him in the post. Typical Joe Burrow, right? He's got that little something to him, you know? Just a little I don't want to say cockiness, but like
it's
a little
playful. Bravado.
Yeah. And you know, as soon as he sits down and he's like, you know, Ja'Marr Chase just walked out and he's like, I thought he was dropping everything.
I was so funny.
Like, dude, that's so Joe Burrow. And I love it.
Yeah.
And they're taking on that mentality. You could see it because to have those guys play at the level that they're playing, it's because of Joe. A lot of that's because of Joe.
I agree. I said when he came into the league, I said he reminds me of Tony Romo, and everybody saw that as a criticism. And I'm like, I defended Tony Romo for a decade on the air, and I think he's even more talented than Tony as a thrower. And I thought Tony was terrific. So that's your game this week, Bears and Bengals. So I want to talk about the Jets. Zach Wilson, choppy in the first half. But I will say this, Sam Darnold is a playmaker. He's never been a beautiful thrower of the football. Zach, in the second half, throws a beautiful football.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is a thing of beauty, and I get why the Jets drafted him. Like, I watched that, and I'm like, he's a little small for my taste. He's a little thin, the frame. But, Mark, he throws – that thing flies out of his hand.
And it jumps out of his hand, and it looks like it's coming out of a jugs machine. There's a couple guys in the NFL. Justin Herbert's like that.
Yes.
Where the ball just looks
so
pretty.
I mean, look at that. Just 25 yards.
So
pretty.
Oh, no doubt. And so when he's in rhythm, and then sometimes he feels better. He thrives in chaos. We said this during the draft process, that sometimes he doesn't have to move around as much as he might, but that's what kind of makes him him, right? If Floyd Mayweather doesn't – talk smack to everybody. Maybe he's not Floyd Mayweather. This kid's got to move around a little bit. He's got to go off schedule sometimes. Even as a coordinator and a quarterback coach, you'd say, hey, man, just hit your back foot and let it go. He likes to move. He likes to move around. Sometimes a little happy feet for me. But still, he can make it happen, and he loves to be on the run. That's what he wants. He wants clear vision lanes, and he wants to be moving.
You know, it's interesting because I was I always say this about Alabama quarterbacks into the NFL. They never trail. And the difference in NFL quarterbacks, Sam Darnold finally Sunday had a run game and led.
Oh, yeah.
It's a totally different ballgame.
Yep.
So Sam looks very competent. Derek Carr last night, 37 seconds trail. Everybody knows you're throwing.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, Baker had to lead the whole game. The last two drives when Baker had to throw, three and out and a pick.
Yep.
It's not a knock on Baker. It's the reality of it.
Yep.
You know, it is way easier to throw with a lead. It's way easier to throw on third and two. I watched Darnold and I thought, okay, he's going to win some games in Carolina. It's not pretty. You're just kind of takeaway on his career, where it's going, and give me as honest an opinion on what you saw in that game with Zach Wilson.
I thought for Sam first, I think this is a better place for him. I think he's with the play calling, with the weapons they have, particularly McCaffrey. I mean, just throw him. I heard Russell say it last night on the broadcast with Eli and Peyton, but him routes, just throw it to him. That's it. Whatever you got to do, find McCaffrey and get him the ball. When in doubt, find McCaffrey. So as long as he does that, and then they'll build this roster around it. But Sam's plenty competent to win. Is he a top five quarterback in the NFL? Not right now. Could he be? Maybe. It's a long shot, but not right now. But they can win with him. They can compete with him, and he's going to be fine. Joe Brady is going to put him in the right situations, and we saw that. He looks so much more comfortable there than he did in New York, and a lot of that's just
coaching.
Yeah, that's just coaching. As far as Zach, I mean, he got into the flow of the game, and it took him two quarters.
Yeah, no.
Almost two and a half quarters.
Yeah.
And that's normal for a rookie to go out and sling it like Joe Burrow. I think we've been, you know, kind of lulled to sleep at how hard that's been since 2008 with – Flacco and Matt Ryan going to the playoffs as rookies. As soon as that happened, since then, all these rookies are playing. Before that, you would sit Carson Palmer, you would sit Aaron Rodgers, you'd sit a ton of guys for an entire season after trading away picks, moving up in the draft. They're your number one pick. You'd sit them. And that was just the way of the world. That's just how it worked. Now, these guys are thrown into the fire immediately, and the expectation level is
brutal.
So high. It's brutal. So, you know, for a guy like Zach, hey, give him a little time now. And he's got a ton of young guys around him. We said this the last time I was on the show. They got to stick together. They got to, you know, manage expectations in a market that is so sensationalized. It's unfair to the guy, but that's what it is. That's what you signed up for. That's what you land. That's where you landed. Deal with it. So it's young guys that got to mature, and it's going to take time.
You played at USC. It was the highest profile program. Then you go to New York. You grew up in Southern Cal, so you get the big city. And I said this. I like Jared Goff. I mean, the kid won 10 a game.
Yep.
You know, 10 a season. But the ramp between SoFi Stadium and Sean McVay and the richest owner and the entertainment capital of North America, Stafford feels more like an L.A. quarterback. And I know it sounds
ridiculous. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
But when I watch Justin Herbert and I think, oh, that's a big stage quarterback.
Yeah.
When I watch Stafford Sunday, I'm like, yes, this is a town with LeBron. And I know it's ridiculous, but Goff sometimes would shrink in big moments. And your thoughts on Stafford, bad culture to winning culture. I thought he just felt like a Sean McVay quarterback should feel.
And he's doing a lot of the things that got overlooked in Detroit. Like, you know how many comeback? He's the leader in comeback wins. They showed a graphic last night. Derek Carr's number two. But fourth quarter and overtime wins, it's just nobody cares. You're in Detroit. It's different. You're on this stage, and he rises, right? His personality shows. He's fired up. You know, you see Aaron Donald after he throws that first bomb, and Aaron Donald's like, damn, he's hot, man. Let's roll. You know, the guy, he's got something to him where it's infectious. His personality, you know, just the way he comes across. And he's always been like that. He's just been overshadowed in a town, in a city, on a team that's been beat down for a long, long time. So now he's on the best stage maybe possible other than New York here in L.A. This is huge for him, and he's going to be perfect for that. He's always had that quality. It's just never shown.
Finally, USC's got a coaching opening. Any suggestions, your gut feeling?
I mean, a lot of people are drawing the correlation between Mike Bone and Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad call. I think everybody I've talked to at the school has just said this is going to be a long process. And whether they hire an outside firm or do it internally, it's a three-month coaching search. So everybody who's even thinking about that job, you're auditioning now, is basically the vibe I'm getting. And they're going to take their time. Usually you do it at the end of the season. You have somebody in mind, maybe do two or three interviews. Boom, 2 weeks later, new coach. This thing's going to take 3 months. I really think so. They're not going to name anybody during the season. I think Dante Williams has a great opportunity as an interim. I think even if he's not the next coach, you know, as a holdover kind of guy, because of what he's done. He was the recruiting guy from Oregon.
Players love him.
He was stealing all our guys from L.A. And that's the biggest question I have is for the new coach. If I was interviewing, how are we going to keep our players here? Because with social media and all these private flights from all the SEC schools, they're coming and hitting 20, you know, California high schools and stealing all our guys. They're hitting them up on Instagram and stealing all our guys. How do we keep this talent here? Because that's what Pete figured out, right? Ogeron figured out. They kept those guys here when they saw other coaches here. Remember Ogeron said? He said, when we'd see other coaches from out of town in the SEC and Florida and Texas and Louisiana and all that, we saw them here at the high schools. We're like, what are you doing here? Are you on vacation? Like, these are our guys. You're not going to get them.
Yeah.
Like, are you nuts? Look at this SC interlock. Are you nuts? Why are you here?
Right.
So until it's that again, and Dante Williams is a part of that, I think he can keep those guys here. Then they're not going to be competitive until they get that back, right? They got to keep their guys here. But right now, California is open for everybody. It's open for business. We got to tighten those things. And I guess other than Luke Fickell, maybe Cristobal, who's got a serious presence, guys who have New Year's Six experience, guys who have enough personality, like you've said, in L.A. to have a presence in a different time. But don't forget, Pete Carroll wasn't the first choice.
Nope.
Right? Everybody dogged Pete when he first got
here.
Oh,
I did.
They were everybody. I mean, you're not the only one. Everybody was like, oh, twice fired in the NFL? Oh, God.
And he was a home run.
And he was unbelievable.
Had a huge presence.
No doubt. And so do you find that kind of diamond in the rough, guy who's ready to ascend or peak at the right time for this school? I think that's a tough sell right now. That's a tough find.
Great seeing you, man.
Great to see you guys.
How good is he? You should get into broadcasting.
Joy's like average at best.
Got quite a future.